looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, AceTicket.com, WFXT TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Too close for comfort. Here comes the 3-2 to Span. Echevarria takes off from first and swung on and missed. That's the ball game. Kelly with the strikeout and a big smile, and the Red Sox win it 2-1.
Did you feel good about that one, Red Sox fans? Did you?
I didn't.
I mean, how do you feel good about that one? Did you catch that pitch that Denard Span swung at to end the game yesterday? Change up, down and in, by his feet. What a gift. That was a gift. Now, look, it's a win. Okay? It's a win. But the pitch, the final out, was an absolute gift. We'll open up the phone lines right away here on the Baseball Reporter. 617-779-0985. Red Sox take 3 out of 4 from the Tampa Bay Rays. They go to Miami tonight to play the Marlins. Wipe your feet in one part of Florida and then move to another part and wipe your feet on that one. How do you like that? Nice state. Nice baseball teams in that state. Kick the crap out of Tampa, go to the Marlins, kick the crap out of them. You come home, you're 5-1. Again, 617-779-0985. So here are my two questions for you as a Red Sox fan. Jim Murray, who's alongside, and Jimmy Stewart, feel free to chime in if you so choose. Don't feel obligated. You don't have to, but if you choose. First, good thing or bad thing that they're 3-1?
Good thing.
Jimmy Stewart?
Bad thing. They should be 4-0.
Well, Jimmy's got a point, but still.
See, you can always rely on Jimmy to focus on that. And he's worse than me, Murray. Don't let him kid you. He is. He's worse than me. The Red Sox should be 4-0. They really should. I mean, 3-1 is good in any four-game series. It's hard to sweep a four-game series.
Not good enough. 4-0. Tampa sucks. They had a bullpen game.
In this case, they should have swept the four-game series. They really should have. If Joe Kelly didn't throw up on himself and Carson Smith along with him on Thursday, they sweep the series because, frankly, the Rays can't hit. A little too much has been made of the Red Sox starting pitching, if you ask me, in the early part of this season. A little too much.
That lineup sucks.
Now, I'm not telling you the Red Sox starting pitching has been bad, because it hasn't. It's been good. But it's hard to tell. I mean, that Tampa lineup, really, it blows. Tampa stinks. So the Red Sox now go to Miami for two interleague games with the Marlins, with a 3-1 record. But my bigger question with the Red Sox at the moment is this. Someone please explain to me exactly how this team is any different than it was a year ago. Now, it's only 4 games. I'm not telling you they can't change it over the balance of the season because obviously they have 158 to go. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Red Sox have their identity already. But in the bigger picture, when you really look at it, it really was just a continuation of 2017. Starting pitching is good, which we knew. The bullpen, shaky, which we knew last year. The manager, questionable. Which we knew. Also true last year. And outs on the bases? Yeah, they're still making those. That hasn't changed. Red Sox have been made 4 outs on the bases in the first 4 games. That's an average of 1 per game. Even I could do that math. That is 162 over 162 game schedule. Last year, they led the majors by being thrown out 81 times in 162 games. If it's possible, the Red Sox actually are running the bases worse than they did a year ago. And let's not leave out this one. Last year, they had some trouble scoring runs and they couldn't hit the ball out of the ballpark. Do you have any home runs the Red Sox have through 4 games, Jim Murray?
I don't.
Two.
Well,
hold
one.
On. Well, hold right, on. Yeah. Two. Only one of which has actually left the ballpark. The other one was that bloop single nonsense that Eduardo Nunez hit on opening day. Xander Bogaerts, who is one of the real bright spots of this team in the early going, Xander Bogaerts is the only Red Sox player to actually hit a ball out of the ballpark so far in 2018. Xander Bogaerts. But they're 3-1. Again, you'll take it. I understand it's a long season, but to me the bigger question is this. Does it feel any different to you? Because to me it doesn't. It feels almost identical to what it was a year ago.
Are you surprised by that, though?
A little bit, Murray, because I thought we would see more. I thought we would see more power, and not just because of the new approach, but also because I think some of those guys had down years last year. Then you add Martinez to the lineup, and you factor in all those things, and I thought we would see some more home runs, especially because Tampa's a bad team. So when I look at all that stuff, I sort of thought, okay, well, the Red Sox will score some runs here in the early part of the year. They haven't done that yet. They pitched better than I thought they would. Really, if I told you there was no offseason, you'd swear this was just a continuation of the games last year. They have felt like the games of last year. It is really, it's been astonishing in that way. Now, again, look, they're winning. So that's a good thing. But to me, there are still the same questions there were a year ago. I want to get to some of the good things with the Red Sox, too, because there are a few. Most notably, the play of Bogarts, who's been terrific thus far. But there is a lot of ground to cover from the weekend. Alex Cora made some questionable managerial decisions. I'll give you one in particular on Saturday that drove me bananas. The base running, Bogarts, David Price, and tonight's lineup, which is interesting on top of it. 617-779-0985. In the interim, we'll get right to your phone calls. And Pauly, who's in Dedham. Pauly, what do you got?
Pauly, you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go.
Sorry, buddy, if I'm hitting a bad cell. But there's two guys in this team I'm just sick of looking at. I'm tired of them. I just won't want to move them. I've lost patience with them. Kelly and Bradley. I want them out of here. Trade them. Package them. Trade them. Get them out of here for whatever you can get them for. Get for them.
Paulie, you're not going to get any argument from me on either one of those guys, frankly. I mean, Kelly, talk about a high wire act. He blew the game on opening day, gets in there yesterday, gets the first two outs, puts two on, and then has a gift strikeout to end it. And then has the gall, the audacity, to act like he's got some sort of save routine with Christian Vasquez. Did you see that at the end when he recorded the save? What was that all about? And Bradley? I mean, I've accepted Bradley for what he is a long time ago. The guy's a bottom third of the order hitter who plays good defense. Expendable. You can totally move him. As for the manager, boy, Alex Cora isn't off to the most convincing start or confidence-inducing start in his Red Sox career. I'll give you a specific example from the weekend that surprised me and surprised the broadcast team, too. We'll do that when we get back.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Most amazing baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bottom half of the eighth coming your way. Red Sox trying to protect a two-run advantage against the Rays. And Bobby Pointer back out there for another inning. And Gomez will lead things off. Last time up, he doubled. Here he hammers a high, deep drive to left field. That one's going to be out of here and way out of here. Gomez, who had doubled back in the sixth inning, touches the ball to tighten it up. It's 3-2. I was a little surprised to see him come back out for this inning.
I agree.
You know, he got the out with a man on, got the pop up on Kiermaier in the seventh inning.
Let's see if he comes out now. Yeah, here comes Alex Cora. He's down to a run ball game. You've got Carson Smith ready in the bullpen. You've got a right-hander, Duffy, coming to the plate. Time to make the move. But I was with you, Dave. I was a little bit surprised. After he got that big out to end the seventh, I did not expect to see him in the eighth.
Okay, so again, he comes in to face the tying run in a 3-1 game, and he gets Kiermaier out. Now, before we even get to the rest of it, I find that in and of itself to be inconsistent from Alex Cora. On opening day, Pointer was up in the bullpen in the late innings as Joe Kelly and then Carson Smith came in and absolutely lit that game on fire in Tampa Bay on Thursday. Lit it on fire. Pointer was up in the pen. When he was asked about Pointer coming into the game, here is what Alex Cora said.
Alex, take us through your decision-making in the eighth. Did you think of, you know, Pointer at any point?
No.
Get Kelly out of the
room. We're not going to put him in a spot like that. I mean, I know he can get people out, but in that spot, we got him up just, you know, to see where we go. We went in that inning, but I think Carson was the right guy. You know, he's a guy that keeps the ball down.
So if you remember, Carson Smith came in to face a lefty and ended up giving up a three-run triple to Denard Span. So here's the part I don't get. Why didn't you want to put Bobby Pointer in the game on opening day in a tough spot against the same team? But 2 days later, it's okay in a 3-1 game when the tying runs at the plate. So now the second thing feels like a reaction to the first thing. In other words, Cora recognized his mistake from opening day. Hell, I got the kid on the team to get lefties out. I might as well use him against lefties. Fine. This is where mistake number two comes in. Cora then sent him back out for the eighth inning. He let him face Carlos Gomez, who's a right-handed batter. Carson Smith was in the bullpen ready to go. And so in this case, Gomez would have led off. He's right-handed. You would have gone right, left, right. Smith would have faced two of the three right-handed batters to start the inning. Instead, Smith had to face two lefties, and we all know how that went on opening day. So on the one hand, Cora adjusted. He put Pointer in the game. On the other hand, he made a mistake and left him in too long. So I just feel like Alex Cora has been sort of all over the map here, and this is going to be the deal with a rookie manager and a first-year manager. And I thought that Felger actually made a good point this afternoon talking about the rookie managers in general in baseball this year. Gabe Kapler and Aaron Boone with the Yankees, and Murray brought this one up earlier too. They both had tough weekends. You add Cora in, he had a tough weekend. Now, the Red Sox won three of the games. But the rookie manager thing is a real issue. And it's something we're going to have to watch going forward here. Dan is in the car. Dan, what do you got?
You know, I one of my biggest concerns here is they have a lack of depth on the pitching staff and in that bullpen. We're already using two AAA guys in the first five games of the year. And Joe, I've already seen enough of Joe Kelly. I would think that'd be wise by Dombrowski to go out early and find a good, consistent arm. And I'd be willing to bet there's got to be.
So, Dan, wait a minute. Before you go on, do you really think there's a depth of starters? I mean, a lack of depth in the starting rotation?
Well, you already have two people coming in from Pawtucket. Brian.
Okay, no. But there are some injuries, right? Eduardo Rodriguez is hurt. Drew Pomeranz is hurt. Steven Wright is hurt. So do you really feel like there's a... So if those three guys join the staff, the two minor league guys are out, right? They're out. And Brian Johnson's probably out. But do you really feel like there's a shortage of starting pitching on this team?
Well...
You there?
Oh, there you are. How reliable is Rodriguez and Wright? Wright's played, hasn't pitched a game in 2 years. You know you're going to lose Rodriguez. They need at least one other person. Or someone that could go back and forth between the bullpen and the mound, because I don't think that they have enough.
Okay, so Dan, look, you want to tell me they're short in the bullpen, I'll agree with you. Even then, I'll tell you they still have an injury, but I don't know what Tyler Thornburg's going to be, and he hasn't pitched in 18 months. But the rotation? Sale, Price, Porcello, and then on top of it, you will have Drew Pomeranz, Eduardo Rodriguez, Steven Wright, Brian Johnson, and Hector Velasquez is that swing guy you're talking about. Okay, so Velasquez can pitch, spot start, or pitch in the bullpen if you need him to. That's exactly why he's on the staff. I don't think they have a shortage of starters. If you want to tell me they don't have an eighth inning guy, I'll grant you that one. They don't have an eighth inning guy. Keep an eye on that. It's a problem. Mike is in Worcester. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I agree. I mean, I know you're not a Kelly. We call him Bullwinkle. We're coming in there. We all want him out of there. We can't take too much more of him. But I called the other day before the season started, and I said about the big key to this team was Bogaerts, and it happens to be true. So I'm going to call out Bradley today. I know you don't really like him. I hope he goes on that 40-game hitting streak that he had once in his life. But I'm going to call him out. And the starting pitching, I feel confident in. I kind of agree with the caller that was just on because, you're not sure 4 and 5 slot. But I feel very comfortable about starters. It's coming in from the bullpen that I'm worried about.
Okay, so look, we'll get to Bogaerts here in a minute. The starters are good. I told you, this team in a lot of ways is exactly what it was last year. In the first four games, it's been a continuation of 2017. The manager is making some suspect decisions. You haven't been able to score with any sort of real consistency, and you certainly haven't hit the ball out of the ballpark. You have two home runs, one of which was an inside the parker on a bloop into left center field. You run the bases poorly. You're suspect in the eighth inning. I mean, to me, it feels like last year all over again. Chris is in a car, wants to tell me why Pointer was not in an opening day. Go ahead, Chris.
All right, so Matt, so what's going on here? So I think what you're overlooking is it was opening day. I think everyone sitting here in Red Sox Nation waiting for the Red Sox to, like you're saying, pick up exactly where they left off last year and just fall apart at any sign of any trouble. So I don't think Cora, I think he learned his, well, not learned his lesson, but I think he's going in smart and he's going to play conservative. He's not going to put the poor kid in day one in a tough situation. And I think that's the tough situation he's talking about is day one, opening day. Everyone's tuning in. Everyone's watching across the league. They don't want to see this kid get peppered day one.
Okay, so but, Chris, you know, why was Pointer up in the bullpen?
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe so he's not crapping his pants 2 days later when they put him in and he blows it. That's a good question, but I agree that you see some rookie managing going on with Cora and across the league, but I think I would have done the same thing. I guess that's a good point, is I wouldn't have had him warm up at all. I wouldn't want to see that kid get crushed day one, especially when, like everyone's saying, that's calling in.
Okay, so Chris, he should have never had him up in the bullpen. That's what I'm telling you. You add a guy to your big league roster as a result of injury. You get to opening day. You have a situation where you need lefties out, and you get him up. And then the situation arises, and you don't put him in. Then 2 days later, you do? Well, then what did you get him up for? So that's all I'm telling you. Now, look, I don't know what kind of manager Cora is going to be. It's four games. I'm not burying him forever. But I'm telling you that there's been some inconsistency. And then he wants to put Pointer in the game over the weekend. Fine. Let the kid get his feet wet. Let him get some success. Let him get some confidence. Once he gets Kiermaier out to end the seventh, take him out. Don't put him back in the eighth to face Gomez and give up a home run on the first pitch. It's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to build the kid up or not? So this is what I'm saying. He's all over the map. I don't know. I don't think Cora knows for sure yet. And the other managers, as Murray pointed out, Aaron Boone with the Yankees yesterday had David Robertson intentionally walk Josh Donaldson to load the bases.
Well, as it was, I mean, he had him in there in the eighth inning. Once he had a man on first and second, I would think you'd want to get him the hell out of the game. So intentionally walk him. Okay, put in a new pitcher. You know, why risk the grand slam, which ended up getting hit anyway?
So,
and he looked like a shell-shocked veteran after the game. Like, he didn't. He was like, oh, my God. Like, he knew he screwed up.
So the part of it that I find interesting, Murray, is that Donaldson was 3-for-8 with a couple of homers against Robertson. So that's why they walked him. But then you have him facing a lefty and Smoke hits a grand slam. And then today, the worst part of the whole thing is today, Boone says he doesn't believe in the intentional walk. Well, then what the hell did you do?
That's even worse.
What the hell did you do it for on Saturday then? Because you felt like the numbers, you know, you felt forced into it? So again, I think these guys are all trying to search right now. And Gabe Kapler had the worst of the bunch. Gabe Kapler tried to bring a pitcher into the game who wasn't warming up. The guy wasn't up. He went out and called for him, and all of a sudden the guy had to jump up, get up, and get loose, and it caused a whole stink in Atlanta. So the managers did. They struggled, the first-year managers. And I would say, by far, Kapler was the worst. But Cora's searching. He's searching. I mean, he's all over the place with this relief corps, and it's compounded by the fact that they're trying to protect the starters, and so there are more innings to fill at the back end of the game. And they've played close games. Kimbrell was unavailable yesterday, so Kelly had to close. There's already some pressure on Cora, and it's a good thing they were playing Tampa because they went 3-1. It could have been worse had they been going against a better team. Maybe they'd have gone 1-3. We will continue with your calls. I want to get to Xander Bogaerts and a very interesting piece of information that Sean McAdam shared with Matt McCarthy on his podcast.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Good count, 3-1, and he strokes this one high and deep to left, racing back Smith, turning around, she's gone. He's still at it. Xander Bogaerts puts the Red Sox on the scoreboard. Actually, he is locked in.
So a caller in the last segment said that Xander Bogaerts is the key to the Red Sox season. I don't think he is. I think he's one of the pieces in there. The bigger ones to me are J.D. Martinez is a must. If they're going to be different than they were a year ago, J.D. Martinez has to hit. Okay, and then I've said consistently, Bogaerts or Devers, one of those two for the offense to be what it can be. And then the other guy is the other real bright spot for the Red Sox this season. Bogaerts is number one so far. No question about it. He's been dynamite. Okay, and on that one, you got a great example of what the Red Sox are trying to do with Bogaerts. 3-1 count. That's a hitter's count. Good chance of fastballs coming. So what do? You turn on it. You drive the ball. That's an opportunity to do damage, not to punch a single to the opposite field. If you ask me a year ago, Xander Bogaerts would have punched that ball to the opposite field. He'll take the single. Now, he's trying to do damage. And just watch him turn on these balls. On that ball, he turned on it, yanked it for a homer. Right? The doubles down the line and into the left field corner. He's turning on those balls. You're seeing more balls hit to left and center field from Bogaerts. When the count calls for it, when the count is favorable, and he drives the ball. When the count's not, you see what he did on Friday night, and he shot a single to right field. If Bogaerts can strike that balance, hit to the situation, he may achieve his potential. I told you, I'd have moved him at the end of last year. I was done. And I might be right. I'm not ready to say he's all of a sudden turned the corner. But so far, Bogaerts looks like a different man, and maybe there's a reason, which we'll get to in just 1 second, but first, let's get back to your calls. And now, Sean, who is in Taunton. Go, Sean.
Hey, what's up, Maz? Quick point on Bogaerts. We both know that he's a first-half player, so I don't think what the caller said is going to save the season. He's after the All-Star game. He's been horrible. But my question is referring to J.D. Martinez. I'm wondering how you think his playing time is being determined. We know when the Sox signed him, it almost took forever to get that press conference out. And Dombrowski was asked about that, and he said it was the language of the contract. And I'm wondering, do you think that Martinez has a stipulation on how many games he's played as a position player? Because there's only 4 games in, but he's already taken one away. Doesn't help he's not in the lineup tonight, but do you think that could possibly be in his contract where he needs, 40 to 50 games in the outfield?
So, Sean, I doubt it. I doubt that there's a specific, that there is specific language in there that, indicates he has to play a set number of games. I'd be very surprised if that exists, that would then allow him to, opt out of the contract or, increase the salary, something like that. I don't know. He played 2 games in the outfield over the weekend. He is not in there tonight. And I thought that's what you were going to bring up. The Red Sox are in an interleague game tonight. Martinez is sitting. Now, why you would sit your cleanup hitter is beyond me. But you brought up the contract, and again, I thought you were going in a different direction. The contract was delayed because of language over his injuries and his foot injury, specifically the Liz Frank injury in his feet, or his foot. I don't remember if it's right or left. But regardless, he played 2 games in the outfield on turf over the weekend, and now they're going to a National League Park. He's going to have to play the outfield again. Maybe this is why he's sitting. Is that they don't want him on his feet for 4 straight days in the outfield. They don't want to exacerbate a problem that has been in there in the past and that did delay the actual announcement of the contract, the signing of the contract. So maybe that's the reason. And if that is, then okay, I feel a little bit better about it because at least I think there's some logic to what Cora is doing. And so, maybe I just generally, though, I like the idea of having J.D. Martinez in the lineup every day. There's a reason why you acquired that bat. Scott's in Connecticut. Go, Scott.
Matt, how's it going, buddy?
Good.
Thanks for talking. Hey, in my opinion, the most important parts of the team this year is David Price and the 7th inning. And everybody's freaking out about, the bullpen's weak, the starting pitching's weak. We have three, correct me if I'm wrong, 3 all-star starting pitchers coming back within the next month or so, one of whom is going to have to go into the bullpen probably for long relief. How do you think they're going to work that?
Okay, so Scott, well, let's wait and see. Assuming everybody's healthy, they'll cross that bridge when they get to it. Now, I don't know if they're all stars, but you're talking about Pomeranz, Wright, and who am I leaving out? Eduardo Rodriguez. Pomeranz and Eduardo Rodriguez are going to be in the rotation. I don't know what Wright's contract status is with regard to options and things of the like. So I don't, maybe they could send him back to the minor leagues. And unless Brian Johnson is so lights out that they can't move him, my guess is he's going back to AAA too. So unfortunately, you have to manage it for the 162, because it'd be great if you could just take the best players all the time and approach it with a football mentality to, you know, win every game. But in baseball, you really can't do it that way. It's just not practical. The season's too long. So we'll see how it shakes out. Hell, I don't know. Maybe they go to a six-man rotation. I doubt it, but I rule out nothing when it comes to that. When it comes to that sort of stuff. Before we get back to your calls, I want to bring up Bogaerts again, because Bogaerts has been talked about a lot this spring, this early season. He's off to a great start. He is one of the guys that the Red Sox really had to tap into in terms of maximizing his potential or maximizing his ability, right? Because let's face it, as the caller said, he's been garbage after the All-Star break the last 2 years. Last year, a lot was attributed to this hand injury. But Bogaerts has not consistently hit for average and power other than, I want to say, the first half of the 2016 season. That year, he did well. He was off to a great start that year in terms of average and power. And then it faded in the second half. And then last year, I didn't think he was very good at all. Sean McAdam, what's the name of Matt McCarthy's new podcast?
Hardball baseball talk?
Something like
hardcore
that.
Hardcore baseball talk.
Hardcore baseball.
Yeah, hardcore baseball.
There you go. You knew it as well as I did, Jimmy, huh? I was actually a guest on it at week one, which makes my stupidity worse.
You were the second guest. Carrabis was the first.
Oh, was he? Well, that was a mistake. Matt already made a mistake there. In any case, McAdam was on with Matt McCarthy. Hardcore baseball. You can see the podcast or hear the podcast on our website, 985thesportshub.com. But McAdam offered a different perspective on Bogaerts a little bit, that all the problems with him in the past weren't necessarily just mechanical or physical. They might have also been emotional and psychological. Here's Sean.
Bogaerts is the kind of guy who might benefit from the managerial change more than anybody else on this roster. I think there was a disconnect for whatever reason between Bogaerts and John Farrell. I think conversely, Cora is a guy who, having come up as a shortstop, being Latino, I think there's more of a connection there. And I think also that there was at times a strained relationship between Brian Butterfield and Bogaerts. And Butterfield is renowned as a terrific infield instructor, but I think he can also be something of a drill sergeant and a taskmaster. And I think Bogaerts is the kind of guy who probably does better with a pat on the back than he does a kick in the pants.
Murray, did you know that Xander Bogaerts and John Farrell had a disconnect?
No.
I mean, it doesn't feel like it was talked about a lot, was it?
I know that there was a disconnect between him and Jackie Bradley Jr., but him and Xander Bogaerts, that's news to me.
It feels news to me, too. Maybe it's been out there, but not that I remember. And did you have any indication that Brian Butterfield and Bogaerts didn't get along?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, I had always heard the opposite, that Butterfield's the guy who brought Jeter along. He was going to work with Bogaerts, and he'll make him into a better player. Now, again, I suppose that doesn't speak to the relationship of the two. But I find it interesting that maybe Bogaerts wasn't comfortable with those two guys. He didn't like Farrell, and he thought that Butterfield rode him too much. And so I will say this. I think Bogaerts is sensitive. I mean, this goes back
I think that's apparent. Even early last year when they were, you know, they had some early season struggles and they missed David Ortiz. He was one of the guys that was most vocal about it.
And Murray, let's not forget the year that they moved him to third base when they brought Stephen Drew, and he went into the tank right after that. Right? So Bogaerts needs you to show some confidence in him and show him some love and pat him on the back, and he needs reassurance. He needs affirmation. He needs all of that. And I'm not telling you I like it. I'm just telling you that's the way he is.
Oh, that's his generation.
So I have wondered about this, and I probably should brought this up. When the Red Sox hired Cora, the whole idea was, well, I shouldn't say the whole idea. Part of the idea was, well, let's hope they're not doing it just to hire their first minority manager in club history. Like, are they trying to make some sort of statement as they're changing Yawkey Way back to Jersey Street? Like, is that what it is? Is that the right reason to hire a manager? But what if they felt like a minority manager was better for their current roster because they have some minority players that didn't necessarily connect with the previous manager? Bogaerts, Devers coming up, Christian Vasquez behind the plate, Jackie Bradley in center field, Betts in right field, J.D. Martinez, you've now signed, Hanley.
David Price.
Eduardo Nunez. I don't know. I wonder. I'm throwing it against the wall. Did they look at their roster and say, you know what? We had a lot of minorities on this team. Which I commend the Red Sox for, by the way, to go out and get the best players no matter what they are. There was a time in their history they didn't do that. Now they do. But maybe they looked at it and said, we need a guy who can connect with these guys, and where he's from does make a difference. And we'll see how it shakes out with Bogarts and Bradley and Vasquez and Price. If all of these guys become better players because of the managerial change, well, then whatever the factors were the right factors. Angelo's, my buddy Angelo's in Methuen. Go, Angelo.
Hi, Anthony. You know, you can't get down on Bogart. You know, I always liked him. You know that. He's the hottest hitter on the team right now. And he ain't going to choke unless he gets hit in the hand or whatever happens, you know. But if he doesn't get injured, he's going to lead the league in runs and RBIs.
Okay, so Angelo,
I'm crazy, but you know that's the way I feel.
Angelo, I don't think you're crazy. Bogarts has great ability. I don't know if he'll lead the league in RBI, but honestly, I don't care. I just want him to be among the top three in his position in the league, which is what he should be. And we can judge that however you want. OPS, RBI, RBI in runs, created, all that kind of stuff. You can do whatever you want. I'm just telling you, Xander Bogarts is better than he played last year. He's really better than he's played his entire career. And one of the things with him is he's been too passive. So what I like about the early part of the year, watch him turn on these pitches. He's ripping balls into the corner. He's hitting balls out of the ballpark. He's swinging aggressively. He's a big kid. He shouldn't be trying to shoot singles to right field all the time unless he's got a guy on second and third and there were two strikes and he gets a pitch he has to fight off like he did on Friday night. That was a beautiful thing. I'm okay with that. But when he gets into a hitter's count, he should be looking to pound the ball somewhere. And he is.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mack.